All right, welcome everyone. It's 6 p.m. I'm going to officially call to order the Town of Heath Select Board meeting. Tonight is November 21st, 2024. Thank you all for coming. We have one sole purpose of this meeting tonight. This is a poll hearing. This poll hearing is for National Grid petitions. There's two of them. We have petition number 309-33364 and number 309-33367. We have recording of the meeting in process. Is there anyone else other than Barbara in the front who's recording? If we need some more chairs, some folks can grab some back there. We've got them stacked up. Housekeeping first. Make sure everyone's signed in as you come in the door. That would be greatly appreciated. While that's taking place, just a brief announcement from myself. I am obviously, as people know, or some don't, so I'm Robin Provost. I'm the chair of the select board. This is an elected position. And for clarity, my position here tonight is representing the chair, representing the select board as chair. I do also have an elected position as an assessor, and I'm not here in my role as an assessor. I want to clarify that up front for the record. There is a quorum of the assessors here. Neither of us are here in our duty as assessors. So just for clarity, putting that out there. Other housekeeping, other boards. Does anybody else need to call a meeting to order? Did anybody else post for tonight? Raise your hand. If not, I'm gonna move past that. Nope. Just wanted to make sure there's no other boards that have to call their meeting to order.
I don't know if it's necessary, but we have a quorum of the MLB here, and we are not here as MLB members. We're just here.
Thank you. And so there are, I see faces of a lot of board members, committee members. So just making it clear that there's no other posted meetings at this point. So no other boards or committees will be making any decisions. Okay, so introductions for up here in the front. We've got Elisa, Elisa Miarengo here, select board member, myself, and over here is Will Emmett. Let's see, Oh, Nancy over there. Nancy is filling in for Hilma as the town coordinator, taking her minutes for tonight. Thank you for
being
here.
You're very welcome.
Much appreciated. I'm sure Hilma's very upset that she's missing this meeting.
She is heartbroken.
I'm sure she's crying. So other just housekeeping, kind of the rules for tonight. We're going to turn it over to folks from National Grid to present. That's going to be first. I'm going to give a brief period for the select board to ask any follow-up questions that they might have at that time for any type of clarity. If there's other board members in particular, if anyone's here representing a board and needs to ask questions, I'm going to hang tight a minute because one other board member, planning board member is coming in. I'm just giving the little housekeeping, Doug, housekeeping and rules for our meeting. Are you going to be doing any type of recording that we need to? No?
No.
Okay. And then we'll open it up to abutters. There's abutters here, I know. So if there's abutters that have questions and concerns, and then just to the general public. I'm going to ask that everybody take a first round of questions. And then if you have a second, just let's let people filter through and everybody get a chance. I'm sure there's a lot of questions to be asked. And then just my niceness reminder, folks that are here from National Grid are here to they're doing their job. They're here to answer to any type of questions that they can on their petition that's in front of us. And just remember that we're going to try, everybody has the right to speak and say what you want to. It's one of our rights here. And just please remember that for many, this could be an emotional situation, and give people a chance to talk. And we're going to ask that there's not back and forth banter going back and forth during the meeting. So that's just my request, and hopefully we can get through with everybody still being okay by the end. If we need to take a break, if people need to take a break for anything, just give me a holler. Any other questions, thoughts, Will?
No.
Not this one.
Alisa.
Not this time, thank you.
National Grid, welcome. You want to introduce yourself and away you go.
So my name is Robert Ide. I'm representative with National Grid. I'm the community manager for this great town and 31 communities across Western Massachusetts. Representing the company on behalf of this project today with my colleague Pat Shea.
I'm Pat Shea. I've met a few of you before. I'm the project manager for this, the Bear Swamp project. It's the Bear Swamp Work Performing Theater project that goes into Ethan Charlemont.
You guys
going to
start?
Good to
go. Here go.
Right. I will start. You probably have, might have more, yeah, a few more people might show up. I think
okay.
I got stuck with the rain driving in. So just
that's fine.
Warning, more people might show up.
Sure.
So you all have this pamphlet in front of you. We have been in past hearings and we presented this project before, just a quick run through. I'm going to refer to it as what we've been calling on our team is the gap. Obviously, a large part of this project is the worst performing theater. The 1019 W1 that feeds through a lot of Heath and Charlemont. We deem that as a worst performing feeder. It's down the bottom, essentially 5% of our feeders in the state, and we're required by the DPU to provide safe, reliable, and cost-effective power. So a part of that is we are on the first page, or the first map you're gonna see. That's gonna be closing what we're calling the gap on Burlington Road, which includes installing about 15 total poles. Through to connect that gap on Burlington Road from the feeder at the bottom to the feeder on the top, essentially. Just standard new pole construction, three-phase power with Hendrix cable going through to connect that. We really need that gap in order to, essentially we're calling it a feeder tie. So that way if we need any switching, if one side comes out, we can come up from the other side, close a switch, and we can turn the power back on the side that's out. Really just boost reliability, shortens outage durations, make it safe for our crews to operate and whatnot. The next map is, the second half of that map is just the remainder of those 15 poles closing the gap. And then I believe, the work request that ends with 3367. Just a few, certain poles that are going in on the northern half of Burlington Road. And I believe is there one on, no, just on Burlington Road. Just new poles that we had to relocate a pole, replacing the pole that's with further away from that 3 feet that we're here to petition, just for reliability reasons and clearances, operational clearances and whatnot. So that's the main rundown of the project.
Thank you. Select Board, Alisa.
Not at this time. Well, thank you.
Not at this time.
Okay. Sure. I just have a few kind of follow-up questions, and then I'll have others. Everybody knows I'll always have others.
No problem.
So after we had our informational meeting back in August,
yes.
Right, there were a number of questions that were asked, and a handful of them followed up on, and then others are kind of still hanging. Are we gonna have those conversations tonight and receive those answers? I think that's some of my question.
I guess my initial ask is, do you recall which questions are still remaining?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I from my understanding.
The only reason they're chuckling is because they know.
I'm happy that you have a very involved community. This is one of the best things about this is, we're here to answer any questions. If we do not have a specific answer, I could definitely find a timeline of when we'll have that responded to, but I'd love to hear any question that you have, and Pat and myself will do our best to answer.
Okay, so I'm gonna start by doing that, and then I'm gonna send it out. But just so those can be out there, and maybe they'll answer some questions folks have, and maybe not, there's gonna be a lot of those.
Absolutely.
Questions, and I'm very appreciative of the answers we received back, because we got quite a few answers from that night, so that was very helpful. One of the concerns that is a concern from residents, select board, highway department is double poles.
Yes.
Right, and so that was a question that was in there about how we handle not being in a situation down the road where we look and see double poles. How is that going to be handled? Because from what we've seen on other projects, it isn't handled well. And the request that I had sent out was that actuality, National Grid became a leader in this overall project, and like a project manager almost, to try to make certain that those no longer used poles are removed in an appropriate amount of time. Actually, per Massachusetts law, would be great, but so that was kind of the question, one of the questions.
Yeah, I can speak to that. So the overall process for having double pole resolution after our assets are transferred is having each subsequent attacher move their assets.
Mm-hmm.
That period should be done in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a third party attachments team that manages the relationships with all third party attachers. We send out emails encouraging them to move their assets. Once the last attacher has moved their assets over, in most scenarios, it's Verizon, who's also a joint owner of the pole. They're responsible for coordinating the removal of that asset. So in part, we are able to encourage our attachers to move their assets, but under the obligations that we have with them through a contract, we have no penalty that we could put in place for them to force them to move their assets faster, but we do encourage them to move forward. Now, we do know from the state of Massachusetts that they are trying to expedite that process to move faster, and everybody's acutely aware of this. We've had joint meetings where we speak with our attachers to say, we need to be more efficient at this. I think through this project, we could pilot kind of pushing that further and a little bit faster. So I can't say with absolute certainty that it will be resolved within, let's say, X number of days, but we can take the action to ensure that this process is more efficient and we communicate better with our attachers.
Okay. Who is driving this project? Who is pushing National Grid to do this project? Is it National Grid alone?
National Grid alone. We're mandated to provide safe, reliable, cost-effective power, and so we are driving this project. We see it at the bottom of our feeders, and it's on us to.
Bottom of our feeders, as in one of our worst performing feeders.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So from a reliability perspective, Keith has been receiving what we deem as insufficient reliable power, and that must be corrected. And this poll petition specifically creates a scenario where we could offer better power. I don't want to say better power, but more reliable delivery of power based on the available switching outcome after the fact.
Where does the mandate come that tells us that the poles need to be as tall as they are, the 45-foot poles? Where does that originate from?
That originates from our standards are based off the NESC, the National Electric Safety Code. I'm pretty positive that's what it stands for. Essentially, it's just the standard safety construction clearances that we're required to construct by.
Are our shorter poles allowed?
Not
by that code?
Not for three phase.
Okay. The town's agreement with National Grid dictates how attachments and who pays, how attachments are attached, reattached, and how and who is responsible for those costs. We've had this conversation. You knew it was coming again. Yeah, yeah. So these unanticipated larger scale costs, because it's such a push for, at one time. It's not like, oh, we're replacing one pole and here's a cost. We're replacing or moving, how many, 80 something to a tune of X amount. We have not had luck in trying to find a source for covering those costs or helping us pay for those costs, which I could assume could continue to grow for the town over time. Where is there another way that National Grid can help with that?
Before I answer that question, you made a comment there, getting larger over time. Can you explain that a little bit more? I just want to understand your question fully.
So Heath is part of Wired West, and we share our costs. And if this is happening in other towns, those costs would be shared by Heath. So there's no way for us to really know or predict what those costs could be. And members of the municipal light board may have more current information, but you know, we can assume what ours are going to be, but other towns, as this three-phase project unfolds in other locations, we wouldn't know what those costs could be. So it could grow. And in our neighboring town, we know it's much higher than here. That's part of this project in Travelmont. So, you know, as good neighbors, we're here for Heath, but yes, we also pay attention. This is a Travelmont Heath project, so, you know, we do our concerns because it affects all of us. So.
Understood. From National Grid perspective, there's nothing that we could do from a financial capacity to assist the town in the transfer of their assets. This mainly comes down from an equity position, in the sense that we cannot provide a courtesy or a one-off for the town of Heath and not provide it to every other community that we have across our service territory. So going down that road, we do understand that there is large amounts of work that are going to be coming down the pike, especially due to the electric sector modernization plan. What towns that you work with in conjunction specifically, I'm not sure. Although we are communicating with our community. Oh, I thought you were sneezing. I was going to say, God bless you. What we are doing is communicating to the communities that we are going to be performing large scale distribution projects in as early as possible. That we're going to be performing work in their communities so they can be aware, especially if they're third party attachment holders as well. This was also a learning experience for ourselves going through a project like this.
Are there additional projects in Heath that will be moving forward other than this one?
Not in a distribution sense, but transmission, there will be projects coming down the road in the future, but that's high voltage transmission lines, not small projects. Timelines in those are a number of years out, but there are projects that are scoped, but not progressing presently.
Can you tell us what's happening on Avery Brook Road?
The other side of Avery Brook Road, we are just looking at an alternative design, getting an advanced start on that.
For this, in an alternative to
just,
this?
Just looking at all options at this point, yes.
So it's not an additional?
Nope, not an additional, it's just alternative supplemental design.
Thank you. I'm gonna stop talking for a minute. So other boards are, committee members, municipal life world, but you guys are all here as individuals, nobody, right, okay. All right, so I'm gonna let abutters go and then everybody else. So, Wanda.
Thank you. Before I start, I just wanna say this is not a personal attack on these two guys. They've been to my house a few times, so they know what I'm up against.
Thank you.
So John and I are here to ask the select board to deny the permit for the four poles proposed in front of our home and request that National Grid bury 550 feet of three-phase power at their expense to preserve the view. This portion of Burrington Road is unique. It has never had power lines before, and situations like this deserve special consideration. When we acquired the land in 1984, it was completely wooded. We have no view, no power, and a challenging parcel to build on. In order to get power, we had to purchase six poles, and the power came from the north. No power ever existed from our house to the bottom of Burrington Road. We have no intentions of developing the property, and therefore never had a concern for power lines. We built our home from scratch, and we moved in it. It was barely livable. What you see today is a result of 40 years of tireless work to create a truly special place. One day, John decided to cut a few trees, and to our surprise, this most incredible view emerged. Since then, we cleared landscape, centering our outdoor and indoor living space around that breathtaking view. This is our life work. We are finally at the point where we have time to sit back and fully enjoy our haven. As you can imagine, we were devastated when we discovered that National Grid was proposing to install three-phase power up our road. Since May, National Grid has visited our home three times. I encourage several times to have those at National Grid that are in charge making the decision to bury power lines to please come to my home. in person witness firsthand the devastation that this would cause. But most people never came. I devoted endless hours over the past few months consulting with knowledgeable professionals to conclude that burying the power lines is a simple solution. We had a glimmer of hope when National Grid's contractor, Wass Brothers, visited the site to provide them with an estimate to bury. He explained that the trench would be about 30 inches deep, 18 to 24 inches wide, and encased in concrete. This would also include the line needed for broadband. We invited him to our home, and he immediately looked at the view and said, they have to bury the lines. Your view needs to be protected. He also confirmed, along with many others who are qualified to voice their opinion, that burying the lines is not a monumental task and should be done here without hesitation. If these ugly power lines are installed above ground, it would drastically reduce our property value. I have driven around and witnessed the sunlit glare that is reflected off the three-phase power lines to know it would make it unbearable. Our view is wide open, we have no shade trees, and the southern exposure provides sun all day. Because our home is elevated and the site is so exposed, landscaping is not an option. We cannot hide those power lines. When I read about National Grid on their website, I came across a value page that I found very interesting. It is noted that they do the right thing and they put their customers first. The cost for them to bury the power lines is far less than the loss in value to our property, never mind the emotional damage it would cause. There is no comparison. So as a customer of National Grid, they did not honor doing the right thing or putting a customer first. We've submitted documentation to you in advance explaining the reasons for our request. And I also have renderings and photos with me tonight for anyone who would like to see how the three-phase power lines would look. The photos don't do it justice. You need to see the view in person to fully understand the impact. National Grid can absorb the cost, just as Eversource recently did for one of their customers in Ashfield, where they buried new three-phase power in an area where no lines existed and at no cost to that customer, and they protected their view. National Grid will have to bury the lines to town specification. We will assure there will be no, that will assure there'll be no future issues with the road. The team that is here from National Grid, these two guys, they know this is gonna ruin our view. Bob, first time there, said, this is probably the most beautiful views I've ever seen. Unfortunately, they will not volunteer to bury the lines. They will be forced to do it. We are not here to stop the project. We just don't want to see it. As longstanding citizens of Heath, John and I are asking you to please do the right thing and protect our view. We thank you for listening, we thank you for your time, and we also thank for the people in this room for listening.
Thanks, Wanda. Anybody else with you that would like to speak?
My name is Phil Pless. I live in Ashfield. I'm a retired realtor. I've worked for the same company in Shelburne Falls for 42 years, and I've worked with Wanda. I've known John and Wanda for many decades. I know their property quite well. They own a unique property with amazing views. It's rare to have a view like theirs that you don't see another road or another house. It's unobstructed. This makes their house extremely valuable. I've represented sellers who have had to sell their properties for less than they could have because of power lines obstructing their view. It is a known issue. I feel installing these lines in front of their view will result in a $250,000 loss of value. I do know the property Wanda spoke of in Ashfield. They built their house in 1968. Power, they had to pay to have power brought up from town, and there was never power in front of their house. similar three-phase project, but by Eversource, to same issues in, that they're raising as far as reliability. And when they got to this person's house, they buried the lines. It didn't take long. No muss, no fuss, and certainly goodwill. Thank you for listening.
All right, other abutters?
Dave Peterson, I'm an abutter to Wanda Jones' property. I split my time between Connecticut and Keith. Love it up here, it's beautiful. Not like my street, I think you're in here, which is near I-95. They put in three-phase power on our street probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. I left the photo on my truck, but I can tell you, these things are not beautiful at all. And our view out the front of our house in Connecticut used to be unobstructed, and we have a nice view there too. Not like here, but it's decent. And it definitely changes the character of what it looks like. And I've talked to my neighbors on the street. We can't get enough interest to pay for burying the lines there, but I know that that would be a solution. And again, I think the National Grid folks that are here, they're fine people. I'm sure all the people at National Grid are fine people. It doesn't seem to be within their charge or responsibility to address the concern that Wanda has. And I don't understand that. I mean, it seems like there are alternatives and solutions. And once this thing is done, it's done. And it's not going to be pretty, I can assure you. I can assure you based on my own personal experience. So I don't know how else we can help Wanda other than if the board can get behind her and ask National Grid to look at these alternatives and not approve the project as it stands. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else have question, comments? Go ahead, Doug, and then Bill.
I'm Doug Mason, I'm the chair of the planning board. I think that I have a problem with the whole process here. It doesn't seem to be any discussion. Our only options are now the permit. If we want to have any discussion, we don't have any idea how much it's going to cost to move all of our internet lines. You know, we know what it's going to do to some people's property. There's other people that might have the same problem. It's just, it's a really difficult place to make a decision from when you don't have any of the information. And when we're not given, like, this is not a negotiation. This is, here it is, take it or leave it. And I think if you turn down the permit, which is what I think we should do, then there could be some discussion about an alternative route or about how much is it going to cost. Maybe burying the lines in front of Wanda's house is going to be the cheapest way to do our internet. Maybe a company that makes $20 billion a year can come up with a little bit of money to help us move our internet lines. So I don't think we're even given a choice here. We just have to turn it down.
Bill.
Hi, Bill Fontes. I'm on the MLP. I'm on the planning board too. But I'm glad you're marking out your experience and stuff on Avery Brook Road. I don't know why that wasn't done before it was brought to the town as an alternative route. But one of the things I noticed, I did some counting the other day, and a little bit of a non-scientific study here, but what it would cost the town if you come up Burlington, you're talking about 86 volts. Or we would have to do the transfer. If you come up Avery Brook, it's 46 volts. A big difference. And it wasn't even presented. I understand maybe it's more expensive for you. I have no idea. But I know it's a hell of a lot more expensive for the town to come up Burlington. So I would agree. I think the way it's presented here, which is this is what we're giving you, I think you voted down because there's no other option.
David.
Yes, David Gordon, 68 Avery Brook Road. Robin, you brought up the double pole issue. I just want to mention, according to Mass General Law, utilities are required to remove poles within 90 days of the new poles being in place and wires transferred. Unfortunately, there's no fine if they don't. Really, the only incentive for them to do it is good community relationship. And as of the October 31st report, there are 12 poles in Heath that are past 90 days for being removed. In addition, there are, I gotta say, 10 or 12 old poles on Burlington Road in that area where the new poles are going in that, you know, nobody are not on this list of poles to be removed. So I'd ask the select board to consider using this as an opportunity, if they decide to approve this project, to try to get some kind of commitment from National Grid and Verizon. And by the way, this petition is from both National Grid and Verizon. Verizon's not here, so I suppose it's easy for National Grid to point the finger at Verizon at this point. But in my mind, it's the responsibility of the two companies who own those poles to remove them in a timely manner according to state law. And in addition, I would like to see those other abandoned poles on Burlington Road removed if this goes forward. So I'll just leave you with that latest printout of the
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ned.
So my name's Ned Wolf. I'm a member of the MLB. And over the years, we've grown to know how important what happens at a particular pole in a particular part of town can be to the rest of the town. Things that happen at a single place can affect many other places in town. There's something National Grid's been doing over the past couple of months that's near the intersection of Bray Road and Coleraine Stage Road. It focuses primarily on a single pole, and it's involved putting quite a bit of equipment on that pole. So much that it's got my curiosity and probably others. Can you tell us what's happening there?
So, to my knowledge, you said it was Bray and Coleraine Stage Road intersection. That sounds like it's part of the flipper. A part of it, it's independent from this project, but it will help the reliability in the area once the project is complete. That pole is likely installing a recloser, which essentially the automated switches where if tree falls on the line, it'll open the switch, shut off power, obviously make sure everything is safe. After about five seconds, it'll try to close that switch. If it still detects the tree or the branch still on the line, it'll reopen. If it doesn't, often, with the Hendrix cable, the tree might bounce right off. If it bounces off and doesn't detect that fault anymore, then it'll stay closed and powers back on within seconds versus hours. That old work is all part of that effort, and where we have a bunch of reclosers that essentially communicate with each other. I hope that answers your question.
So you're citing that whole is independent of other things you're doing at that point.
Correct.
And I would think it would be dependent on
it's independent. They'll help each other, but they're a part of different projects.
Yeah, they're two distinct projects the FLISR rollout. FLISR is an acronym. I'm going to butcher it, but it's fault location system ice.
It's fault location isolation system, restoration.
It's system restoration. Yeah. It's acronyms. They're great and terrible. Essentially, the way that this works is if you imagine you have two branches of let's say cable, and if there's ever an event that occurs, you're able to close that center, and you could isolate specific parts of what's now networked. So if there is ever a situation that occurs, everybody outside of that isolated portion will be restored, as opposed to that specific piece that's now been isolated off. And after it's isolated off, our crews get notified, so our response time can reduce for those customers who are affected, where traditionally, if you have a piece of the, you know, the feeder that goes out, a large section of the feeder could be out for a significant amount of time until someone physically comes up. So to Pat's point before, this project, while it'll allow for more opportunities for networking for the system, that FLISR will be able to work independent of this project, but it'll be greatly amplified when the project is completed.
What you're basically saying is that you'll be able to sectionalize the fault.
Yes.
To minimize customer outages or faster restoration to certain customers.
Just gotta make sure you let me know when you're
going to apologize. Tell you not to.
Thank you.
123 Hearing the Road. I think that's an important piece of the puzzle. You guys are not describing these people, the citizens here, is that your system is going to be designed, or is it going to be designed, to sectionalize the faults to reduce the customer outages in heat. Is it worth the value that we're asking for here?
Well, that's the key part, as Pat mentioned before, being the gap. So if we have that gap being able to be closed, if there's ever any type of outage that happens, let's say north of Burrington Road, it could be backfed through Charlemont up Avery Brook Road. So that allows for that reliability. So when we're talking about reliability, it is that system isolation that does come into play. So that is a critical piece of this. And we probably did a terrible job in relaying that. We tried the point of reliability, but when it comes down to, you know, the way electricity works, the layperson, I'm an engineer. I have a real hard time explaining it on a easy level at times. But your question, yes, the answer is yes.
Other questions?
Yeah, hi, I'm Devin Clark. I actually live on the same line, so I'm nowhere near Burrington Road, but I wonder, first of all, where does the town of Pete's Power, where does it come from? You're calling us the Bear Swamp name. Well, Bear Swamp's in Row, does it have,
yes.
I don't understand, why do we need this feeder that comes from Charlemont, and how many households is that feeder going to help? I mean, I'm up there on the Vermont line. If the power goes out, is this going to help me? Or how many houses in Heath is it going to help?
Total customer count, I don't know. Do you know?
Yeah.
That one, I'm not sure. But let's speak electrical systems real quick. So on the most general level, we're talking about electric generation to distribution. You have your electricity generated, it goes through high voltage transmission lines, and that goes to a substation, and we go into the distribution system, which we serve everyday customers. That transformation between high voltage and lower voltage distribution, transmission distribution, is Bear Swamp. It's presently coming out of the Bear Swamp substation, that's a ton of history. Bear Swamp substation is one feeder. It's the 119W1 feeder. The goal, 1019W1, they all come together after a while. The overall goal of this project, you have phase one, which affects Charlemont and Heath, and phase two of the project is actually happening in Row itself. What's gonna happen is this is gonna break off into two separate feeders, so we'll call it, you know, let's say 9W1 and then 9W2, and that allows for that switching to allow to occur. So essentially all of the power that's happening in your area here, Charlemont, Heath, Row, Monroe, and Holly across the way is all coming out of the Bear Swamp substation. So this project will be breaking that single feeder into two, so you have two independent feeds. So at any point, if your feeder goes out, let's say you're on the 9W1, which you would be coming in this direction, you'd be back fed by the 9W2 when that transformation on the switching occurs. So, and for total customer account, it's all the residents that are outside of independent generation, be all the residents that live in Row, Monroe, Heath, Charlemont, Holly, probably forgetting one here, but essentially all the communities that we serve in the general area.
Okay, so now if the power goes out, I'm out too, but this it could give me power even though I'm way up on the edge.
Yeah, it would significantly reduce your outage time if you had one, because if you're in a situation where, let's say, a tree comes down right in front of your house, you might have your service come down. That's a little bit different of a scenario, but for the you know, the large swath of customers that we have, that three-phase network is coming through, that'd be picking up large amounts of customers at a time. Do you want to add to that at all?
Nope.
Okay.
Other questions?
Right there.
Oh, you want to go now?
Oh. Have you done a, I mean, with all the high-powered engineering help that you seem to have here in your company, have you done a trade-off between the cost of burying the line in front of Ms. Mooney's house versus taking the alternate route up Averbrook Road? Has anyone looked at that yet?
So with our internal conversations, we did look at estimates that we received. And like I said earlier, we're mandated to provide best, safe, reliable, cost-effective vehicle, obviously besides safety, power. And when we did look at the underground solution, you know, the increase in cost was obviously a factor, as well as the operational, not benefit, the opposite, I'm playing on word, the issue with, you know, with operational factor, if there's any underground line, we need the closest crew to do any underground work when, if is any other underground issue happens, is coming from Worcester, versus the closest barn here is North Adams. Okay. So, you know, greatly increasing drive time, greatly increasing outage duration. Yes.
But isn't your underground line, in fact, that should be more reliable, isn't it?
The only thing to say is that if there is an issue that happened at a riser pole, that would be the only situation that would have a problem, right? Is it, when it comes out of the ground, it has to go to riser poles.
And that doesn't mean that outages will happen on underground. I apologize.
That's okay.
That doesn't mean that outages don't happen on underground cable. We have plenty of areas in our system that are fed or a mix of overhead and underground. And it's common, and I work in a storm room during storms, and it's common we're sending out underground crews to do work. Thankfully, they're about more out of the Worcester area, so it's close for them. But we do have to send underground crews up to further towns.
I'm going to just follow up on Will's question since it's there. What are the costs? Because there obviously is a cost. I'd like to know what those numbers are. So there's a cost associated with the poles and the above versus the underground. So there's, you know, what is the delta?
Are you asking the delta between above ground, underground?
Yes, for that 500 feet that we're being, that's being requested.
I don't know that number offhand. I might have to take that one back.
Stop secret.
So that's, so, I mean, I think in this conversation, that's a really important piece, right? That's been a discussion point. So that would have been something I'd like to know. I may be the only one on the select board.
Oh, of course. Well, it's important to know.
Yeah.
Trying to make a decision, but I'm hoping that there's a part B to answer to Will's question, which is the cost of coming up Avery Brook. Do you have a sense of how that number would compare to bearing lines? And if you offered that, I missed it. I apologize, but I just wanted to make sure that you got an answer to your question.
Yeah, that was my original question.
Yeah. So early, and like I said, I don't remember the cost off the top of my head. Early cost looks, we use canned estimates. That's just what we're provided with the company. And then obviously as we do further design work, we can get a more, you know, ironed out estimate on any work, whether it's underground, whether it's the reroute on Avery Brook. That's part of getting a more accurate estimate for an Avery Brook route is a part of what those crews were doing out there this past week, is doing that supplemental design to at least get more details on what the design would be and a more accurate estimate.
May I follow up?
Yeah.
What is your expected time to have that information available to us?
I believe they had design done in December, late December, early January.
I would say so. Would that cost consider everything from environmental?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. And I just want to make sure if we're giving you a number, we give you an accurate number, not a number that says, you know, this is just the electrical cost, but there would also be, you know, vegetation removal is a huge piece that comes to buy. I just felt it that way today. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the creek that falls along that, so that would introduce environmental concern potentially that our consultants would have to take a look at. But if Pat's saying that it's going to be by around December, his accuracy has been spot on for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just the cost being looked at. I know you talked about the environment, that type of thing. But just the user friendliness, or what other benefits or disadvantages there are from Avery Brook over the Burlington Road, will that be looked at as well by the company as you're moving forward?
Yeah, all options are being looked at, not just cost, obviously. Safety, you know, environmental permitting, as you said, you know, schedule, all of it.
Thank you. And so when you're talking about cost, you're talking about the cost to National Grid. At what point does the consideration of the cost to our town and to our residents come into play for you?
When you say cost to the residents in the town, are you specifically talking about MLP, or are you speaking towards individual customer?
Mostly MLP, but you know, the cost that the town would incur for anything having to do with this project. I don't know what those might be, so I'm just kind of speculating. But when you talk about casts, right, you're talking about costs for your company. I'm wondering if you're considering what it costs us when you're talking about most effective costs.
Most effective comes down to a couple of different angles. So one is the least amount of work that's gonna be imposed on the community itself. One of the reasons we looked at Burrington Road is just the distance that gap is compared to going all the way up Averybrook Road and coming in on East Main Street. So we look at it from that angle as well. When it comes to our individual attachers, the conversations come up where we introduce the project to folks, but having individual engagement with each attacher saying, this is what's gonna cost you, that conversation typically does not happen.
What determines those numbers? So when Bill said, I'm gonna go back to Bill, the 80 versus the 40, just in round numbers.
80 versus 40.
Poles.
Oh, poles, okay.
That's what I was talking about.
Right, so why are there so many, how much more distance is there on?
That's not counting new poles.
Huh?
Not counting the new poles.
Okay.
That's existing.
You're talking about moving from old pole to
new pole. So you're not including the.
Where there wasn't
no,
any
okay.
poles before.
Right.
There's
okay.
no
okay.
Just to clarify for the room, we're speaking old pole to new pole.
Yeah.
You're saying attachment. You're asking about reattachment costs from an old pole to a new pole, and then any attachments to any mid-span poles. Because just for clarity in the room here, if there's any new poles, like virgin poles, like in front of Burrington Road, there'd be a process where the town would have to apply for an attachment agreement for those new poles. So those should not be considered
in
any
that,
aspect
okay.
of the town. Mm-hmm. I just
you
want to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yes.
All right, is there anyone? All right, first I'll go to Phil and then
I was just going to say, I'm glad that you're talking about the double poles, that all the double poles are still in Ashfield over a year and a half after the three-phase poles went in. And I'm sure it's an issue of getting Verizon and Westfield Gas and Electric to move because it's an unanticipated cost. It was a project that was foisted. One thing for Verizon to move their phone lines, which they don't have much anymore, but for our municipal light districts projects, it's a big expense, and I suspect that's why nothing's been moved. Don't know what can be done because it's not their equipment.
Just going to clarify, National Grid does not own assets in Asheville.
Right, correct.
Right, no, that's
correct.
Yeah.
Yep, but it's an issue.
Right.
This double polling.
Sure. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what I said earlier, and I forgot to mention it. So I'm all for improved reliability. I mean, I don't have a generator, I don't have a battery. I'm all for it, believe me, 100%. It's the way you're going to do it. The other thing about the buried lines thing, I mentioned this briefly at the other meeting, at the prior meeting, Green Mountain Power, which is a decent sized utility in Vermont, they're spending a ton of money to bury all their lines by 2030. A lot of reasons for that. One of them is safety and reliability. I mean, so yes, you have to service it every once in a while, I suppose, but it's got to be a tiny fraction of servicing a pole. There's no, you know, you get rid of so many things, and line worker safety is another big factor. I mean, there's a bunch of other things too, but I just wanted to remind people of that. So that's just a few miles away from us. They're doing that, and that is the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes?
Tom Lesser. I'm an attorney and I represent Wanda. Just following up on that Green Mountain Power point that was just made, they recently installed 50 miles of underground lines in rural areas. And during their three worst storms in terms of outages for poles, there was no damage in 2022. In 2023 to any of those lines. And in the words of one of their employees, this will be a game changer
for customers, the lights stay on. And then for us in the field, it increases safety. Every line worker I know has had a close call, and being up on a pole when there's a big gust of wind isn't a great feeling. Our exposure to the most severe elements will be reduced, and our neighbors stay powered up. So there are clearly advantages to going underground in general. I represent Wanda, and we're talking about 550 feet here. And I submitted a memo or a letter to the board, and in that letter, the first thing I said was that Heath has the absolute discretion, the absolute authority, if it chooses under Massachusetts law, to require that certain locations be buried underground. And that can be for aesthetic reasons. And the DPU confirmed that in a letter to State Rep Natalie Blades and State Senator Paul Mark. And they referred the senator and the representative to a specific Supreme Judicial Court case, which upheld the power of the town to require that lines be placed underground. So the board has the authority to do it, should it choose, with regard to the Moonies. Putting it aside, of course, there's Avery Brook issues and there's other issues. But I'm just here to really talk about the Moonies. And they're in a unique situation because they're the only property actually where there are no poles in front of them presently. Other properties may be affected by having taller poles, but they have no poles. And they also are unique because, as everybody really will agree, they have an extraordinary view that is going to be ruined by these poles. And Phil Pless just told you it's the tune of $250,000. And Wasp Brothers came out to lay out that 550 feet, and they told the Moonies to give an estimate of burying the electrical lines. The Moonies asked National Grid for that estimate, never received it, so they hired their own pipeline contractor, J.S. Ray, who has extensive experience in underground installation. And he said it'd be $139,200 or $500. That's a lot less than $250,000. And even if it was twice as much, and we haven't seen the Wasp Brothers estimate, it would still be the equivalent. So I don't know, who's gonna pay? Is it gonna be communities who spent their life creating this view and spent their lives in Heath and having their property decreased by $250,000? Or with all due respect, is it gonna be your company that I think the profit last year was $4.5 billion, is a huge multinational company? And I'm suggesting in that situation, it really should be the company and it should not be the Moonies. I don't see any reason why it can't be underground. It's gonna be less maintenance, Green Mountain Power shows, and it's going to be do the right thing, stand up for safety every day, put our customers first, be inclusive, supporting, and caring for each other, speak up, challenge, and act when something doesn't feel right. And that's what the Moonies are doing in this case. And we'd ask the National Grid to just follow those directives, which they abide by and which they run their company by, according to their website. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments, questions?
I would just add that I know there are preliminary stages of paving proposal, but that may bear the same issue you're occurring currently with roadblocks, people unhappy. So I feel like at some point, maybe two parties should get together and find out what the best easy path is. It sounds like the Moonies are okay with power going by their house. It's underground for 500 and X amount of feet. Versus the new challenges that you may incur on Avery Brook Road. It seems like a pretty simple conversation to have.
Thank you.
No. I have a comment.
Just give your name. Tell us who you
my
are.
My name is Bob Burrington.
And you're from?
One is my sister, John is my brother-in-law. I know how much work they've done. And they have done a lot of work on their house. But you got to do the right thing, all right? You got to do the right thing. Now, I worked for the power company for 33 years. I worked out of Bear Swamp. I worked out of number 4 station. I worked on the Chalmont feeder. And I know that that voltage that runs from Chalmont up to Chalmont and comes from Roe can't be parallel. It's different voltages, so you have to have isolation. Now, we used to be the same company at one time, but in 98 we had to separate. Now, it is the company's responsibility to do what's right for landowner, homeowner, or the public. We used to get calls all the time from landowners. I just put up a satellite. The trees are in my way and they're on your property. Boom, we were there the next day, removed all the trees because we're there, we're stewards of this and we must do what's right. And what you're doing is affecting the value of their property. It's downing it. So do what's right, do the right thing. Put it underground or pick another route. But that's your responsibility. You're the company, you're a $1 billion company. Underground, I've done a lot of underground. I've done overhead conductors. We had a saying, when you put it underground, out of sight, out of mind. That's how we used to do it because it is safer, it's underground, you do it right. I know you don't have to follow the National Electric Code. I'm a licensed electrician at 37 years. I got a master's and a journeyman. You put it in Schedule 80 conduit, you bury it the proper depth, you have dig safe, catalog it. Very rarely do you ever have to do anything to it. Yeah, you're gonna have to have connections on the end of each end, but you'd have to do connections anyways. So do the right thing, bury it or go a different route. It's your responsibility, and that's all I gotta say.
Thank you. Anybody else? Art? Art, go ahead. Yeah. I'm yelling. Art? Yes, I know. Turn it
here.
I gotcha.
Just curious. Appreciate the information, and you guys are there to provide the information. But I'm curious about your authority. Do you have the authority to make decisions about whether it's buried or whether it's not buried, or what route it takes or what route it doesn't take? Do you have that authority, or do you have to go someplace higher?
That is not my authority, nor Pat's authority at the end of the day to make that overall business decision. Well, as a community manager, I take back the information I'm hearing today. Pat, as project manager, also does the same, and we escalate our concerns up all the channels that are necessary to inform our management exactly what is happening, or at least to the best of my verbal transmittance.
Thank you.
Yeah,
tell me who you are.
Faith Burrington Jones, Wanda's sister, and John is my brother-in-law. I'm going to forego what I wrote because it's been said by my sister and my brother,
okay,
mostly about the amount of amazing effort they put in to preserve what they found, and it was a surprise and a gift to them, and it was my father's legacy to build on that hill. So I'm here to support them, and also just to kind of jump to the fact that my son Rowan and his fiancee Brielle Gibson just bought up the road, so they just became neighbors to their Uncle John and Aunt Wanda. And they too stand to be negatively impacted because, and I haven't heard here, but they also can take down trees. And they have two beautiful maple, prominent maple trees out along the road that could stand to be taken down. They're across there at 92 Burrington Road, across from Burrington Meadows. So there's a lot of people that might be impacted in ways that they don't know unless it happens. The other thing I would like to say is, in the case of the Ashfield case that Phil Pless referred to, that property were my neighbors for 35 years as I raised my two sons in Ashfield. So you can imagine my confusion when my sister's case, that my sister's case is even in question tonight after hearing from my neighbor up in Ashfield that the Eversource just buried their lines, like they didn't even contest it. So I'm asking National Grid tonight, I'm confused, that if a big company like Eversource can do that without a problem, then what, I don't understand why National Grid can't do it without a problem, because of the value of the property, because it's a virgin, pristine view. I don't know if the select board has actually physically gone out to view that view, but you have to go there in person to take it in. But that aside, I'm appalled that a company like National Grid with their kind of money can't just follow suit with another company, Eversource, that just buried the lines without a problem. So that's what I have to say. And I just also want to say my purpose in speaking tonight as both a family member and a psychotherapist who works in mediation with couples and families towards peaceful, equitable solutions, I encourage the select board to vote in turn, granting an obvious compromise or even to just forego granting a permit tonight. So there can be some kind of a compromise that's reasonable, respectful, and mutually beneficial that is presented here tonight. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Other folks, other comments, questions? Barbara
Gordon, 68 Avery Brook Road. I guess I'm a little bit confused why we're having a poll hearing tonight looking for granting permission for these polls on Burrington if other plans are under consideration. It seems premature to me. If other things are being considered, we saw the crews out on Avery Brook Road. All of the markings of the poles and the stakes going up. Why are we even discussing making a decision about Burrington if there's another plan that's still being developed?
So that was a decision while we were waiting to obviously get to this poll hearing. This was option number one on our documents in our books. That was a decision that was made that regardless of what the select board decision is tonight, if they choose to reject it, now we're not starting from scratch at that point. We at least have a head start.
So it was preemptive.
Yeah.
Thank you.
David.
So if they choose to grant it, does Avery Brook, that's no longer under consideration, or is that still being considered as a possibly better solution?
That's something we have to take back to our man.
Other questions? Sure.
My name is Brielle Gibson. I live at 92 Burrington Road. Just recently bought my home with my fiance.
Welcome.
Thank you. My concern with these new poles and the cost to the town moving our lines. At the last meeting, we briefly touched upon National Grid's moving out the three-phase projects throughout the hill towns. But there's also talk of smart grids that are coming out. Can National Grid confirm for us that the new poles that they're putting in today, that we have to move our utilities to at the cost to the taxpayers in the town, that we won't have to do that again, perhaps before the lifespan of the poles, if a smart grid comes to the area?
I just, you're using a very ambiguous term, and I just want to know what you're asking by smart grid, because people use that to mean a whole number of things. So do you have any more clarity around that definition before I make a response?
Unfortunately, no. I wasn't aware of it before the last meeting.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'll speak to big, like, general terms. So what we refer to smart grid, or the grid of the future, is our plans to update the system. And that includes Wizard, that includes projects such as this, where we have, Wizard that will be able to be implemented. We use spacer cables, also known as Hendrix, that's like the brand name for those. The other piece that's coming out in the future is known as AMI, or Advanced Metering Infrastructure. So essentially, smart grid is the future goal of the electrical system to be a more dynamic and interactive grid. This project is on the path of that. Now, to your question, is there anything else that's going to come through that's going to be a large project replacing distribution poles throughout the community? At this point in time, there is no project that we're aware of that's affecting these communities within the lifespan of the pole, and we can average the lifespan out to be about, I would say, 40 to 50 years. Failure rate pretty much increases significantly from the last information I saw, but that was a while back. So to answer your question, I do not know of any projects that will be affecting the distribution system in the greater area. There is projects that are coming through for transmission work, which is high voltage, which would not affect the town's assets. So to answer your question, generally speaking, there should be no large capital project coming through the area that would affect any of the town's assets. Barring any customer that would want to connect, or a new, in some towns across Western Massachusetts, you have a new fiber company that may want to come through that might cause changes, but that would have to go through a whole process, which you folks would be informed by that customer. But there's none that I'm aware of at this time that would like to come. And I just kind of rambled there a lot. And I'm just trying to hit like every facet of your question, because it was kind of wide.
Doug, and then Bill.
So just to piggyback on that a little bit. So if you were going to put in, say, wireless, LTE wireless on all these poles, would that be by right, now that you have all these poles? Would you have to come down and come back and...
Internet? Oh, you're saying that we want to provide internet?
Internet for the smart grid, for reading the meters, knowing what the power is, that whole system of putting 5G on all the poles. Is that by right for you guys, or is that something you have to come back and ask the town about?
So I have to take that back. I don't know the details around that. I know that AMI was approved overall.
What's AMI?
AMI is Advanced Metering Infrastructure. So essentially, the way that we read your meter today is that once a month the truck comes by, and using radio frequency, we get the reading of what the usage is. The system that's going to be coming forward, which is Advanced Metering Infrastructure, it's being piloted just outside of Worcester presently, and it's going to be deployed across the Commonwealth by 2027. That will change it where it's called a cellular nodal network to transmit the information from your meter to our, essentially our substation for that billing application. And the benefit of that, also that new infrastructure would allow you to see your usage in essentially real time on 15-minute intervals, so you can make better decisions about your energy usage to bring down your overall energy consumption. If you're like me, you want to keep the bills down. So there is going to be assets that are installed on poles. The process for that, I'm not sure. But a town such as yours, and we see this as kind of I say an opportunity as opposed to a problem. In Heath, as well as Roe, as well as Monroe, there is limited cellular opportunity. So in those circumstances, for any customer that cannot move to the new system, they are grandfathered into the traditional someone drives by once a month. So what's gonna happen specifically for this community will have to be determined by the AMI team, and that's something that I know myself and Gene could take back as a question. Gene's in the back of the room here with us as well. Gene, thank you for coming. I know you didn't have a far ride, so nonetheless. But we can take back the information and find out more info on that.
So just so for the select board, mm-hmm. we need to know if they can come along and put 5G on all these poles, because that does have implications for, it has other implications for the town. That's another thing that we need to consider.
Bill.
Just wanted, just in general, my impression of how this was presented, the future for you guys, for that, it feels like it was just jammed down the town's throat. Feels like you guys came, started marking stuff out without even a phone call from the town, as far as I know. Whether you're required to or not, I don't know, but maybe it would be some courtesy to let the town know you're coming in and doing some work on the roads. And then coming with a plan where, by your own admission, there was no other alternative put forth before you came up with this plan. There was no alternative. So it was just, here it is, it's what we're doing. So I just, as a town person, it felt like you jammed down the throat. That's it.
So I guess, just to explain, you know, the rush on the project, like you said, you know, this is the worst point of feeder. We're mandated to, you know, increase reliability to the feeder. We were made aware of the severity of the status of this feeder at the beginning of this year, which is really why it was just such a quick, we're calling it a rush job. I just want to make sure that's known, that, you know, it's really, we found out about this early on in the year, so unfortunately it was just a quick turnaround on our.
And roughly about that same time period, I got the information and I started to establish, new to my role at that time, I started establishing meetings across Western Massachusetts with different communities. This one included where we gave initial awareness of us considering the project. And then what we do is anytime that there's gonna be potential, anytime there's gonna be work in the community outside of a motor vehicle accident or some type of emergency work, we try to inform the town of any information that comes through. Sometimes if we're pulled in a different direction, we can get the information out in a timely fashion. But we try to do our best to get that information to you as soon as possible. Yes, sir.
We hear a lot about now that this is, you know, the bottom 5% of
yes.
line and how terrible it is and everything. Now, of those outages that we've had, how many were caused by trees coming down over the lines versus actual line failure itself? The reason I'm asking that is there's been quite recently quite a bit of aggressive tree trimming.
Yes.
And I want to know whether these statistics are from before that tree trimming happened, for example.
And so there's a couple pieces to that. So a breakdown on outage causes, I would have to, I don't think you have that information, no. And Gene, you don't have that on hand? Okay, I just want to make sure. That we could take back and we could find out specifically what the breakdown was. To your point, yes, we do have a very rigorous tree removal program. We have circuit tree trimming and a hazard tree mitigation program where we do go down our feeders on a 5-year basis to ensure that we mitigate any potential for trees. But outside of trees, you can have issues that happen. There's a number of issues that can happen, motor vehicle incidents that happen. But the fact that your feeder is fed out of Bear Swamp, something that could potentially happen to the town of Roe, for example, could affect you here, just as a quick example there. But to your point, what are the specific causes? We can take those back. It could be as trivial as eroding. Eroding could get on the top of a transformer, blow it out. We've seen that. It could be a tree coming down, it could be a motor vehicle accident. There's several reasons for outages. I would like to see the information myself, and if we can provide that to you.
Wow. All right. All the hands went back up.
Well,
question after waiting.
Sorry.
I have that problem.
Yeah, you do?
No.
I'm curious, this is a poll hearing, and there are specific polls being proposed.
That's correct.
And I know that there's been some discussion about it and questions about the location of specific polls and its relationship to the road and culverts and that sort of thing. And I guess I'm asking the select board whether or not those kinds of questions are going to be considered when you decide or not decide to.
I still have questions. Just letting people go and seeing if anyone else has the same question, but no, I still have some questions coming. Barbara?
To piggyback on Will Emmett's question, if you're going to get that information about the causes of outages, when you presented that information, the statistics that were worrying about the frequency of outages,
yes,
that Heath has experienced, and that being the motivator for this work, I would like to know, you gave the information on a 5-year total.
Yes.
I'd like to know what years those fell in.
Oh, so you, like if it was a bar graph, like we have, you know, I think it was broken out with like one customer out, 5 to 10, this is that. You'd like to see that for year one, year two, year three, year four.
Exactly,
five.
Because okay. Our personal experience,
yep.
And we live in one part of Heath, and Heath has a lot of surface area.
No, I completely understand.
Our personal experience, we moved here 5.5 years ago, and our first year here, we had a lot of outages, and we learned how to use our generator. But after a lot of tree work was done, and after a lot of was done to get the broadband up, we've had almost no interruptions. And the interruptions that we've had have been either brownouts, very brief, or loss for just a few minutes. And so to me, if the trend over the 5 years was, yeah, we had, if you look at it 5 years as a total, yes, there were so many. But if they were all in the first 2 years and the last three were infrequent or mild, I question the...
Yeah, I'm going to speculate, and I don't know if this is true, but this is just based off experience of the communities. When a town has make-ready work associated to, you know, fiber connection, what typically happens is you may have new poles that are added, some folks might not. But during that process, if the pole is raised, then there's new clearances around that pole that have to be met from a vegetation standpoint. So you might see a drop-off that happened due to vegetation removal that happened in that area. But one of the key pieces to this is the fact that the connection on Burlington Road is going to be three-phase. So that's the artery, right? That's the main passage of electrical flow when it comes from the transmission substation all the way out to use the customer. So that coming through there has a larger capacity to bring more customers on at a time. You know, if you're an individual customer and your service goes out in front of your house, it's a different situation than having mainline go out where you're going to have a large scale outage with a number of people going out. So I don't say it's apples and oranges, but it's when you look at the numbers, it's when you're looking at large scale outages, it's usually because three-phase power has went down and this project's going to mitigate the essentially the effect to the most people across like some type of event. You know, weather events are a real critical item that we're seeing. Climate change is happening and we are seeing more severity in storms. Mm-hmm. I can just tell you by the frequency of the times it called for a storm. We have two roles. We have our daytime job and a storm role. Just for me calling the storm role, we're seeing a lot more storm events that are occurring. So we understand that weather patterns are also a real thing. So we want to ensure that the reliability is there for all of our customers.
I understand, but I would be very curious to see.
I'm curious as well. I'm an engineer, I'm a numbers guy, right. So I'm data crazy. I'm like, I'm in. So
I'm just wondering if we're chasing a problem
that
no longer exists at the level that drove the numbers up, that triggered this investigation or this plan. That's all.
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think on our last meeting we discussed, I think there was 20 outages in 5 years maybe it was discussed. I think we asked about not only frequency of outages, but also duration of outages. Mm-hmm. That would kind of give us, because 20 seems like a small number, but what are the durations? Right. I think you guys talked about maybe getting us those numbers and maybe select forward those numbers.
Yeah, I know charge per cent. Yeah. Oh.
Yes. Yeah, I have them on me now. We did share them with the town. The figures were actually much larger, just 20. It turned out we were actually just looking at one customer. When we expanded it to look at all of the customers in town, it was much, much larger. But those specific numbers, I don't have them personally, but we did submit those to the town. And I'm sorry, I didn't introduce myself. I didn't want to distract them any further. My name is Gene Charles. I am the stakeholder management specialist assigned to this project. My role specifically is to work with abutters and residents, kind of Wanda, John. So I've been assisting with doing outreach and engagement on this project. I'm happy to try to answer any questions tonight.
David.
While we're on the subject of outages, this reliability project really is affecting more than Heath, obviously. It's Charlemont, Roe. I presume that it is going to provide the capability of if there was a break in the line up in Roe someplace, that power can now flow up through Heath up to Roe. And the reverse is true. If something happens on the other side of the Deerfield River in Charlemont, it'll allow power to come down through Heath, down to Charlemont, and affect all of those customers. So when you're talking about outages, it wasn't clear to me whether you were looking at this small piece in Heath, using those numbers, but because National Grid surely is looking at the big picture of reliability. So I'm not sure how you can present that information that will be useful to us, but if you can kind of clarify that when you come back with outage numbers to indicate whether you're talking about the 3, 4, or 5 town area or whether you're just talking about the customers in Heath. Because I would imagine that your metric for deciding that we're in the low 5% is including the greater area, not just Heath. Is that?
Yeah, so the metric does include the whole area. That being said, the data that was sent to the select board for the 5-year, that was specifically for the town of Heath.
So that's a little confusing, because it could be that this is going to have a greater impact in the neighboring towns even than in Heath, right? I mean, it could be we have fewer a portion of those outages, but this is really going to affect a larger area as far as reliability goes.
Improving, you mean?
Right, improving. That's the goal, is to improve it for the entire area.
The project overall will significantly improve the reliability of the surrounding communities that we serve here in the greater area, so Charlemont Row.
Good point.
Phil?
So just when you guys come back with outage numbers, and we talk about duration of outages, I would hope you won't come back with an average, because we had a single storm 2 years ago where we had a very extended average, and that will skew the numbers.
What we provided the last time, and Gene, correct me if I'm wrong here, was the information was the number of outages based on the categorized by duration times. Is that correct?
Okay. I know that we had a number of customers who had 10 plus outages, et cetera.
Oh, it was the count of the amount of customers,
yes,
and the amount of outages that they served. All right. So the information that we provided, sir, was, let's say you're, you know, in the town, if how many outages had affected 100 customers or more, we gave a number to that. Let's say it was like 50. This next line is these outages affected 20 customers or more, and all the way down or all the way up. So we showed the effect across the community, not duration. But if I think we can provide them next to each other to get all that information to you. I think our team could be able to pull that together. I think so, more than likely. If there's any hindrance in that, we'll communicate with the select board via Helmine.
Yeah, my name is Bob Burrington again. The question is, this I know a little bit about it, but this isn't going to prevent outages. The people are still going to have outages. It's just that you don't have remote closure and swapping lines over yet. So you still got to get line crew out. You still got to get the O&M out there to open up, segregate, and then close in. You're still going to have outages. But the duration of the outage might not be as long because you have redundancy, different areas. But you're still going to have outages.
There will still be outages. For the duration.
Yeah, because right now, if you have a situation in Roe, you can open up right outside of Chalma and back feed from Chalma at 4th Station through the Chalma sub. That's the old number 7.
Yeah.
We do that a lot. And the same thing, if we lose part of Chalma, you can feed part of Chalma from Roe. But you can't parallel it because of voltages. The vectors aren't right.
So, part of this project as well is to install a step-up transformer as well. And
it is.
We're actually going to be retiring that Charlemagne sub. That's down to phase 2 once all
the
phase
1 subs. So are you up in the primary voltage?
Correct.
So are you going to change all the transformers that feed houses? Really? That's part of this project.
Yeah. Phase 2, or really, once we're a lot of make-ready work, the Charlemagne piece, we're going to buy that substation. And it'll be stepped down just the section essentially from Route 2 east towards the Charlemagne sub. That'll all still be the 780 or 880, whatever it is, just through the step up. So that span will all be the same voltage as it is right now, but everything else west we're upgrading.
That's
part of the reconductor.
So you're going to have remote switching so that
remotely,
if something goes on, you can open and close. And
yep, that's a part of those Flizzer. It was one of them going in on Bray and Goring stage, part of those Flizzer reclosers. There's 3 other reclosers a part of that effort.
So the bottom of 80 Brook Road that feeds up this way, the East Center is going to have something there?
Yep.
I see.
John. Chief John.
Question, do you have clearance coming through Chalma? I understand there's issues possibly in the Avery Brook Road.
Quick, I don't understand the question.
Do you have approval?
Do you have your okay to come through Chalma?
No, we have that pole.
Because
hearing.
If you don't have that, this could be pointless here.
We have that pole hearing in 2 weeks, the 9th, okay, December 9th.
Okay.
Thanks, John. Devin.
So one of our town people mentioned that this additional auxiliary line could potentially help a different town. Would it really? I mean, we get our power. Is it really going to go down and feed Charlemagne to help them? I don't think it's going to. Is it?
Yeah. So right now, going back to the conversation before about like where our power comes from.
Right.
So right now, everything's coming from Bear Swamp and feeding down into Charlemagne, feeding up here in the heat. And if we have the approval to go on Burrington Road, that'll essentially, tie those two areas together, where we could allow backfeeding to happen between those towns. So if there's an outage that occurs down in Charlemagne per se, you could backfeed all the way up to that point that's going to be isolated out. So going to the point before that, we're not going to eliminate all outages, but for a customer that might be experiencing outages that happen, because of the incidents a little bit farther away, that person might be back then almost instantly and reduce their outage time. I wish I had a map. I had a map.
Yeah,
I'm a map
can
guy.
Can you get a map for the town or not?
Say it?
Can you get a map for the town?
I need a map. I just had like a big like map, a world map, I'm a visual guy at the end of the day, to answer your question overall, the benefit from this key piece of the project that we're discussing today is going to be adding reliability to all the communities in the area. It's that link piece. The only other path that would essentially connect those two would be up Avery Brook Road. The only alternative, which we mentioned before, is an additional several miles along a creek and more. So that's like the two connection points.
What about 8A?
Sorry?
Why is 8A not considered as an alternative route?
coming from Charlemont up 8A and D, that one?
I don't know the engineering background on that one, as you do, Pat.
I don't know all of really background. I know we're speaking with our distribution engineers. They explored 8A. They chose Avery Brook as a better alternative. Yeah. That's all I know.
Okay.
It was explored, though, with that.
I have a handful of questions specifically about the polls that we're looking at tonight, too. Tyson is here from he's our new highway superintendent. Hi, Tyson.
Hello.
And so, welcome. not to put him on the spot, but I just want to talk about the proposed poll locations. Should
yes.
this,
actual
location
yes.
that those polls are expected to go. Distance off of edge of road is what?
It kind of changes. It has to be less than 10 feet, really, just situational.
So I think, Tyson,
yeah,
I don't want to speak on your behalf. What?
We were talking for five. We had some on the floor that were not done.
Were those the stakes that we talked about that we walked, or different ones?
Yeah,
he's
talking about Avery Brook.
Oh, Avery Brook, okay.
But the same would hold true on Burrington. So, right. So there is a concern just to make sure that when a final decision is made, there are some. We'd like to make sure that the highway department is included in those conversations. And I know I think somebody met with some of the folks at one point, but Tyson's new, so we're trying to get him into the loop as well.
100%.
Are there other things, Tyson? That any questions or anything that you wanted to bring up?
Not really
okay.
right now.
Okay.
Other than the underground, we had talked about affecting the pavement, but there was also talk about going behind the guardrail and not even impeding on the blacktop, and that would be preferred.
If underground were to be an option, which at right now is not. Okay. Other questions? Will, what do you have for questions?
I've already asked mine.
For now? Lisa, you're awfully quiet. No taker.
No, I'm just listening. It's just such a great conversation. If I may go back to Bill's question about 8A being considered, your response was that it was considered. How well was it considered? Was it considered from an office, or was it considered because someone actually went out there and looked at it? I just want to make sure that we're really delving into the options instead of saying, okay, you know, waiting more time and then realizing, gosh, now we got to go look at 8A as a possible evaluation, as you are now doing with Avery Brook. You knew that this was a concern for the Moonies back in July. And just now you're going to look at Avery Brook as an alternative, just caught my attention, and I don't want to get into another situation where now then you're going to have to go look at 8A a little more thoroughly as a real consideration. So the question is, how well was it considered?
So I can't speak for exactly what they did engineering-wise. I do know that where the normal status or procedure for a project is it starts with what we call option solution engineering. And they essentially look at all options and take a look and do all their math and engineering and then whatnot. I don't know if they came out on site and looked at it. I do know after speaking with them and other plant engineers that they did look at it. I just can't tell you if they truly came out and walked the road, whether it was on a map, I don't know.
Thank you.
That's
just one quick follow-up I had. So much information. I don't think I have anything specific for you again. I know you have a bunch, so why don't you? Do you want to finish up with your questions or where? What did you talk about the question at hand is we're here for a poll hearing.
Right. I feel like there's, for me personally, there's answers that I need to some of the questions that came up tonight. Information that you brought forth, even just about Avery Brook, and you know, then my question. Well, I had the question about the delta on Burrington between overhead and underground. I mean, that's a question for me. Then there's a continuation of the question now about Avery Brook that
was marked and we noticed, so that's brought forth questions. I'm feeling that this should be continued. That's my feeling, that this hearing should be continued. We have a couple options. You know, we could actually obviously close the hearing. We could vote on what we have here with the information we have. We could close the hearing and go into and schedule time for us to come back and discuss it without having the hearing open. We can close it and, I mean, we can keep it open and just pick a date certain and move on to that date, which gives an opportunity for continued conversation, which would be my preference right now. Only because I think there's some information that would be good for us to know before we start deliberating and discussing what our feelings are one way or another. And these are just my feelings, and obviously the two of you can obviously may have other choice or another thoughts.
I feel like we're not gonna have the information we need to make this decision if we're not gonna have more specific information from Avery Brook option until the end of December. That poses a problem for me, that I don't have the information to make this decision.
So, sure, yeah.
One thing that's important to consider when we are doing option solution engineering is we as a company have to look out for the average ratepayer, and we have a responsibility to all of our customers to choose the least cost option. And that's one of the reasons that we choose the options that we do. So when we investigate AA, we investigate Avery Brook, the engineering process identifies all the options that are available and choose the option that's the most safe, reliable, and essentially efficient in the sense of cost-efficient option to our ratepayer as a whole. So the reason that we progressed on the Burrington Road option from that initial engineering stage was that was identified as going to be the least cost to the ratepayer. So we could get the information to you for Avery Brook Road. That would be a more accurate estimate. It seems like we're leaning in that direction. But I just want to specify that that's why we investigated this route, is we saw this from the ratepayer's perspective. This is going to be the cheapest option.
Did you say for the repair option?
Repair.
So every one of us. Sorry.
So think about this. The
so
cost.
Sorry. I don't know the
cost of a project by a utility company. Where do you think that goes?
It comes from all of us.
Thank you. I apologize.
No. It's fine.
Doesn't come from their profits.
In all the details.
I'm just a kid.
It's complex. I know.
No.
So it goes back out in your rate.
Okay.
You look at your utility
rate
bill,
repair.
And you've got different.
Billy does that. I don't look at that.
You must, there you go.
Did you hear Phil's comment?
No, I didn't.
We're not making comments.
But wait.
We have to raise our hands. But just give us a chance right now, the select board, please, because we just want to be able to have a little bit of time to. I understand that.
Yeah,
I completely understand
that
No, I completely understand where that's coming from. That makes good sense to me. What I'm curious about is what is that delta?
I understand.
If that delta is $1,000, and if you're telling me that you guys don't know the answer to that, that would have been something that I would make sure that I had when I came to this meeting. Because it's the biggest question here, right?
Understood.
It's one of those, it's a concern. It's been asked in writing. It was asked multiple times before. So to us, we have to do our due diligence on many levels, the select board. Number one, fiduciary responsibility to the town. No doubt about it. And that is what we will all be doing when we make a decision. And that's to all of the town. The taxpayers. That's not just to one in particular because of the situation. That's to everyone. But in the attempt to get there, it is also our job to make sure that we look and listen to every little piece and part that goes into making that decision, right? Because everyone, single one, is a taxpayer, is making that payment, is that, so we are responsible to those people. So we have to do our job to make sure that we follow through with those pieces and parts.
Wholeheartedly understand.
My take on it, right? I think if you look on the select board
website, that's pretty much number one for us, fiduciary responsibility. Just like it is for National Grid, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
But, so I'm not questioning that.
Yeah,
I just feel like information was introduced tonight and that's been creeping up in the last couple of days when we saw folks show up on Avery Brook, and it's brought forth questions as we look at that. And that was part of my question before. Is there more than, are you looking at more than just the dollars and cents on that project? Is there other value in one road over another, one direction over another, one way? You know what I'm saying? There are other pieces and parts that one might be looking at. That was my question.
Right. What would we gain out of coming up Avery Brook versus what would the town gain by coming up Burrington?
Yes.
So yeah, those are also things, not only the cost of the town, but what benefits do we get with route?
In the decision of making to continue this hearing, the reason we would continue it is to allow for National Grid to come back and be able to have further conversation with us, which is in essence what everybody I think is looking for.
Understood.
Right? And I know that the process is taking a while, but it's taking us a while to get information back for us to be able to review it.
Yeah, and I apologize for the timeline.
No, and that's, you know, it's just. That's thank you, but not unneeded, because I understand that piece of it. It just would be helpful for me. And from what I'm hearing from Will and Lisa, to have some of that information. As we make a decision that could be precedent setting,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. We make a decision that affects people's lives, right?
And their taxes.
Which affects their lives, mm-hmm. right?
Doug, all right, a
couple more and then, huh? Oh,
Doug
was first?
Our comment
okay,
that we were making.
You sort of touched on it, but there's other costs other than dollars. Right? There's aesthetics. We have a historic town center, and I have a separate question about that, but we have, and Wanda, if Wanda's paying $250,000 toward this project, where does that come into the equation about how much it costs to go up one road versus another? So, just one question that does this power have to go through the center of Pete Center, which is one of the most historic towns in the state of Massachusetts? Is that a necessary place for it to go through?
Yeah.
So I would like to see a negotiation, not a take it or leave it. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah, you can go ahead and respond to that.
Really,
I just wanted to bring clarity to this, but
go ahead. Sure. I know that there were questions about renderings because there are just concerns about what mm-hmm. these poles will look like. We did provide some renderings that showed what these proposed poles would look like in the town center. I'm not sure, but I'm happy to share that with you if you haven't seen it yourself or if it's not accessible, but you will see that. Yes, there may be some additional poles, and might be some poles that are removed, but when you look at the pictures immediately, and again, I'm not from the town. I've been here a couple times, beautiful town. I love the ride out here. I'm coming from Eastern Massachusetts. But the town center, in my opinion, I'll leave you to have your own opinion, it doesn't look that different when we add these new poles. Now, obviously, there are areas in the town that will be getting brand new poles that never had them. Obviously, yes, those places will look different. But the town center shouldn't look too different. But again, I'm more than happy to share with you those renderings.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, Dave,
thank you.
So clearly the least cost and rate there, I totally get that, but a couple of things to think about here. For those that are closer to my age, you might remember this, are we buying a Yugo or a Honda? You know, in this, yeah, the Yugo may be the cheapest thing, but what has the least cost of ownership over the long haul? So then when we look at poles versus ferry, that's an example, What about the net present value? Higher cost investment up front for the barrier, but that's going to have a lot better return over the years. So how does that affect the rate payer over the long haul? I don't think you can just say it's automatically more expensive. Green Mountain Power made their decision. And the poles for the East Center, I don't know much about that, but they are higher. I remember the last meeting. 12 feet or higher? You know, they're an extra 12 feet, something like that.
Between like 10 and 12 feet, you call it 10 to
15. Yeah. Is that 10 feet above the ground?
When you look at the, I brought a picture into my truck, but these things are a lot bigger and uglier than the sure. Thank you.
John,
yeah. John Marion, 264 Road, just over the deep line in Charlotte. I just want to follow up on the smart grid question to get a little more clarity. On October 11th, I sent an email to the contact team asking about the wireless assets and the infrastructure that's going to be part of the polls. And they haven't got your answer yet. So I'm trying to you guys, Pat and.
My name is Robert.
Pat Robert. What I got from your answer to Doug's question is that your plan is yes to install wireless emitters on the poles. You know, like I've got a little diagram here from the industry website. It's got wireless sensors on the three lines and then a communications node down below.
It's not a National Grid document, is it?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure.
Is that an accurate depiction of what these are?
Gene, did you say you wanted to take this response? Or
you can.
Okay. I got a look out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, all right, Gene. All right.
It's okay.
Well, so there's two pieces of the puzzle here. So and I do want to ensure that we're talking project and not project. This is outside the scope of this project. AMI is a program that the company has, I believe, I don't want to be specific, I believe we followed this with the DPU. I want to say we did, but I would have to double check the exactness. That will be implemented by 2027 and for getting up to speed, everybody got this before, getting up to speed. By 2027, we'll be moving to a new type of meter, which is, it's just a smarter meter. They'll be able to do two-way communication in the sense that you'll be able to see your usage on a 50-minute interval, and that information is going to transfer back to us using a cellular nodal network. And in areas where we do not have cellular nodal network, if we cannot provide it, then we are obligated to provide the, I'm going to call it traditional, way of reading your meter, which is driving by once a month using radio frequency. Some folks are still opting into the original way of having someone physically go read the meter, and there's a surcharge for that. But some people still like it. So that's a separate and distinct issue from this conversation here, and I'd love to talk to you after about that to get some information. But that depiction that you're showing, that I don't know who made that.
This is like wireless LTE and three-phase power.
Yeah, so yeah. Even so, like antenna space on a pole typically is on the top of the pole. What I've seen for AMI is a little profile. In towns such as Charlemont or Heath, where cellular service is not the best, I don't know what the plans are for this area yet. I know that the email from you has circulated over to me because I know the people from AMI, and we'll be getting back to you very soon on that.
You know, that whole AMI thing, like, for me, this is, like, just about the poles in Heath, like, what they're actually going to be equipped with sort of out of the box. And my concern is that, in addition to the property value loss, in addition to the aesthetics, that essentially what is going to be installed and then installed by right, separate from whenever the smart meters show up, is that there will already be wireless infrastructure, which essentially... if you look at any of the studies about pollinators, wildlife.
Yeah, I'm just going to pause you there. From my understanding, we're not installing any internet, 5G, anything like that on the poles via this project, correct? I wasn't aware of that either.
I don't think that's me either, but I get that there's a certain use to wireless sensors, like, it's a least cost option, just like the other side, like least cost. We get the reading back, we've got a problem on this line, and I get that that's in real time. But what I... the initial answer I got back just for the property, you know, our property, is that they'd be using fiber because there's not good cell service where we live at the road.
Okay.
Well, my question is, my sort of plea to the Keith Select Board is to sort of shoot high, and if you're going to continue this hearing and ask for more information, that you'd sort of dig into this and say, you know, in the negotiations, could you say to them, well, you know, could the whole thing be fiber and not like add an additional layer of electromagnetic pollution up and down what is essentially, you know, beautiful and right now is relatively healthy patch of road? You understand?
Thanks.
I think I do.
Yeah.
We'll talk more after. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to ask people to focus on the polls for this poll hearing from this point for a couple more minutes, and then we're going to kind of try to wrap this up. But we've heard a lot, and I appreciate it. I'm not trying to squash anything that anyone's saying, but I just want to focus right back on these polls for us in the last couple minutes.
Please.
And so I can hear if there's any questions or comments regarding those polls. Yes.
With regard to this talk about numbers, there's 1.2 million customers, and they pay a certain amount to National Grid. So we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, if not $1 billion, which goes into a hearing before the Department of Public Utilities. And they decide whether or not they get a rate increase. And sure, one consideration is how much money they've spent, but there are other considerations too.
Mm-hmm.
The other consideration is how many millions and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars profit are they making, and they're considered to be able to make a reasonable profit, but not an excessive profit. So there are years when the costs go up to utility, but the rate doesn't go up at all. So that's one thing. The second thing is, in terms of what's going to be before the Department of Public Utilities, what we're talking about here is at best a rounding error. You guys should shoot high, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars when we're talking about putting $1 billion in front of DBU. We're not talking about big money. As you should do what is best for Heath without regard to the small cost that's going to take place. And just to bring it down to Wanda's case, I provided the board a letter from Senator Mark and Representative Blaze in which they urged National Grid to bury the lines. I didn't mention, and I should have, they received a response to that letter. And it was from the president, Linda Weiland, who has the authority to decide whether poles go underground or not. And in her response, she said, "We have heard and respect the Moody's concern about the visual impact of our lines. And we are open to pursuing underground utility installation, in her case, that meets design standards." It's not that they're not ready to do it, but Ms. Weiland also said that the Moody's got to pay for it. And that's wrong. That's all I have to say. That is dead wrong that they pay for it.
Thank you.
I just want to know all the maps that you've kind of issued out there, everybody. What is EOP and LL?
EOP means edge of pavement. LL means necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those
are marked at three feet.
So I think on the drawing, are those marked out at 3 feet?
Well, there's a different value. There's seven. There's
some of them.
Yes. Yeah, it's where, and I actually drove this on my way up here. I know all the stakes aren't exactly, you know, based off what these sketch shows. LL means long lead. That's the distance away the anchor is from the pole. Some of the poles have anchors.
Yeah, correct, right. And that's the point.
Yep.
Thank you. Devin.
So I understand this project is National Grid says our town stinks for power, whatever the term was. You're at the bottom 5% of power outages, right? And it's unacceptable. I heard the recording from the last meeting. That's unacceptable to National Grid. Our town doesn't say it's unacceptable. The government doesn't say that's unacceptable. This, whatever you said, the utility company, DPU, doesn't say it's unacceptable. So this is not a project. We have power in this town. This is not a project we need. This is a project that your company says we can't have those numbers. And I know Barbara and David said we want better answers to the outages over the last 5 years. Was it a bad snow year? Blah, blah, blah. We don't even need this project. We don't need these poles going by Wanda's house or anybody's house because this town already has power. And I know Mr. Peterson doesn't have a generator, but there's a lot of people in town who already put in the whole house generator. I don't have that. I have to drag it out from the garage. But a lot of people have a generator. If their power goes out, the generator automatically goes on. So I know we don't have those figures. We have to like call everybody and ask. But your company says our power outages aren't acceptable. I don't know. I think it's acceptable. My power doesn't go out much. I mean, this is not a project our town has to go do. So you're talking about the cost to go up Burlington, the cost to go up Avery. There's no cost if we don't do this project. There's
no cost. So, I don't know. Just another thought. Yes. All right. Well, so let's go back to this.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Continuance.
I'm looking for a little bit of feedback and glimmer from your eyes, and I'm looking for you guys to say what you're thinking. I don't always want to look like I'm making the decisions.
Well, I don't have the information we need to make this decision.
All right.
So I don't know how that translates into continuance or date of certain or whatever, but we're waiting on more information that apparently is coming into December. I don't know what that means.
So that would mean we would be continuing.
Right. If you want me to make a decision now, I can certainly make a decision.
I can do that too, but I don't know if that's in the best interest of the project or our town or anything, because I don't have all the information.
Okay. So I did a little homework, with the town coordinator on dates, and I was looking at dates in December. I guess I have to turn to you and say, when would you have information, some of the information that we've been talking about?
I'd say mid-January would probably be the safest bet. Just in reality, we're coming up on the holiday season. A lot of folks tend to leave their vacation at the end of the year. I can't change that. I would say probably mid-January would be the best, and we can start the process beginning tomorrow, Friday. I have three main takeaways here. Is we want to have the outages identified by its type, and we want to have the outages by date and year. I'm adding one more, outage duration. And then we want cost comparisons for the Averybrook option, the 8A option, as well as this option for comparisons. Well, the 8A one is not being pursued at all, from my understanding, but we'll get some information on what analysis was done on that.
Right, I'd like to know why it's not being pursued.
Why not?
Thank you
okay.
so much.
Not, yep, no, absolutely. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is there any other takeaways that the...
I'm sorry, you said that, so the Averybrook
yep, yes.
cost comparison between above and below, underground.
No, that'd be in addition to this. So you were asking before about the difference between going Burlington as opposed to Averybrook up to East Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wanted a cost comparison of above ground via underground
on Burrington Road.
Correct.
And then we wanted more information on why 8A is not an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wanted, when it comes to outages, we wanted duration, we wanted type, and we wanted a breakout of the past 5 years to see if there's a trend line in those. Am I missing anything from, I'm going to take this from the select board's
yes.
perspective.
When you're looking at, since you've already started looking at the Avery Brook option, I'm just curious, other than the dollars and cents,
okay.
you know, what are the pros and cons of either? I mean,
yeah, money's not a factor.
Right,
just put that aside.
Right, right.
No.
Yeah, no, that's
yeah, but I'm agreeing
it.
With you. I had
yeah.
the same thought.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned challenges on Avery Brook, so
yeah,
that's, you know, put that in the cons.
Trees,
I mean,
no
I'm not.
Impact.
This isn't. We're looking to get as much.
Yeah, do it. If you don't do it now, you're in trouble. I made the mistake in the dark.
Comic relief.
I think he's right.
Comic relief.
Good one. It's an iPhone. They're the worst. But is there, and mainly looking at the select board here, is there any other questions from you folks that you would want us to take back?
It's not a question.
Okay.
I'm going to throw it back out there again.
Please.
Because here comes that whole
I'm ready.
Robin and the dollars and cents, the big
yep.
old dollar sign above my head.
I love it.
Just this glooming piece of the cost to our town of this project. And I understand, not just to our, so this is where I was gonna go with the next piece. So I understand your response before about, you know, we can't do a one-off for Heath, this one project, that type of thing. It shouldn't be a one-off for just Heath. It should be looked at for everyone that this is affecting, every town.
Agreed.
Because there's just a baseline, there's a couple pieces that I just clearly want people to understand is in Heath, as well as in other towns, we just recently paid out of our pockets for an infrastructure upgrade.
Yes.
We just did that.
And we're still paying for it.
And we're going to pay for it for many, many years. And if it makes us as select board and finance committee members make decisions every year of things that we cannot do for our town to support
yes.
that upgrade that we already bought into and we're getting the benefits from.
Yes.
It feels very odd to me to then say to the taxpayer, I'm going to ask you again to pay for another infrastructure upgrade in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
And that's not just Heath. That's not just about Heath, that's about all of the national grid towns, because Eversource isn't charging, right? Eversource is not charging. So Coleraine, right next to us, drive on one of their roads, double poles, boom, 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 and just happening. John, have you been up there to do a patrol for any of those projects on West Lyden? But other officers from Heath have.
Yeah.
They've been up there, and Eversource is getting poles put in, every one of them, double poles in every situation. But Eversource isn't charging. They're doing that. And I understand it's different contract terms, and I understand that. It just doesn't seem right to me.
It's not.
I need a statement, I guess, from National Grid telling me why this is okay.
Yeah.
And I know that's not you guys. You guys can't answer that question.
No, but I know the appropriate teams
And the answer back, let me just say one thing,
please,
I'm sorry.
Please.
The answer back that you signed the contract with us that says that's okay, that's not okay. That's not the answer that makes sense to me.
I wouldn't agree with that.
Because when a contract's looked at and you make a decision, you're not thinking in your head what could happen that in 5 years down the road, this is gonna come out of nowhere.
What we'll do is there's a team called our third party attachments team that you know manages all the relationship with our attachers, same folks that you dealt with when we were going through this make ready process. They gave you that E2 document. Actually,
yeah.
I think that's more the board that was doing that. But nonetheless, that team is in charge of all facets, third party, and I'm going to bring this question direct to that manager tomorrow, and essentially ask for a comprehensive understatement of why. And have it be a little bit more than just to your point. I don't want them to say to you, it's a contract, it's an agreement. I don't like that. I want you to have clarity. I want you to have understanding. I think we can get.
I would appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I'm
here to help. That's one of the reasons myself, Pat, and Gene came tonight is we want to work with you. We want to hear you. We want to understand the problems. And it's in our best interest to work with you folks. We're partners in this together. We're, you know, National Grid are members of the community as well. Like, we all live in the service territory. It's what we do. So I want to thank you for your time. Thank you, actually, all of you for being here and making comments. There's a few people that I do want to speak to when we do make it out here. We're not out yet. Nonetheless, I do want to touch base with a few of you, but I also want to thank all of you why I'm speaking right now. So thank you.
No, and that comes in the return. I mean, we appreciate you being here and being on the hot seat. There's no doubt that we get that it's challenging to be on that side of the table, especially when you're not the person who makes some of those decisions, right? It's frustrating from this side of the table when any entity comes to ask us to do something for them, or grant a power, but the folks that come aren't allowed to or don't have the information that somebody else higher up on the food chain has, and they kind of just kind of like throw you out to the wolves. It feels that way, and maybe I'm just picking on National Grid right now because that's who we have to face right now. But that's a tough position when we feel like we're not on the same level. You're asking the select board; we're the ultimate decision making in this. So, but we're not on the same level with National Grid because you guys aren't the ultimate decision making. So that's a tough gig. And that's why we need more information.
Right. So going back to, how do we do this?
So we're going to have to pick a date.
January to date certain, to continue. I don't have much January. Sorry?
Is there a due date, like is there a certain part of the application that's granted if we don't act?
Well, continuance to date certain is acting, I believe.
Yeah, we're not
just saying, we're not talking about it. So.
That's why we're picking.
That's the only reason.
Good question. I don't mean to date certain. I mean, could we do a date? I'm not suggesting this, but if we said date certain a year from now, we can't do that, right?
We have to do it with what is
agreeable to both parties?
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
So we can go into
faith.
January without,
yes.
Okay, as long as we're acting in good faith and not being silly with our time.
You can pick any day you want.
Correct.
But I think within reason, like, we have the holidays and we're
going
to have
a
time.
Oh, but had I been into,
I don't have my January calendar. But I mean, I don't have any.
I've got one
right here.
You've got one on your computer.
So you're
no,
telling me by the 16th of January?
That's a Thursday.
That's a Thursday?
Yeah, it's the third week of January. I believe that we would be all set from that perspective. Pat, Gene, do you have any consideration otherwise?
The 16th of January,
Elisa? 16th of January, well. 16th of January,
you're already going into vacation, so you're gonna be
we're
here.
Back.
We're gonna be at budget hearing. We'll be nice and tan and relaxed.
I have another one.
Oh,
close,
huh? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's expecting essentially January 20th. So, it's their first one.
Okay.
3 days early.
Wait, who's expecting?
My wife.
Look, everybody's got to
be
quiet, please. January 16th, 6 p.m.
January 16th, 6 p.m. And I got a number of actions as we discuss. We'll take these back. What I would like to do is tomorrow I'll have an email going back and forth between Gene, Pat, and myself. We'll lay these questions out nicely. I'll send it to, will Helma be out? Because you usually send things directly to Helma. So do you want me to send it to you three or to yourself?
You can send it to Helma.
I can send it to Helma.
Send it to Helma.
I'll send it to Helma. She just typically my point of contact for
right.
You.
Yeah.
So I'll send it to her to say
yeah.
This is the questions that we took back.
Yeah.
Feel free to add any additional questions that you may have that come up. And between myself, Gene, and Pat, we will do our best to get these answered to you as soon as possible. And then hopefully everything will be in place here for the 16th of January.
Select Board, can I have a motion, please, to continue this public hearing? morning until January 16th at 6 p.m.
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Elisa, aye.
Will, aye.
Robin, aye. Thank you. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome to come back if you'd like to on January 16th at 6 p.m. Barring a snowstorm. No. We're still.
Select board is still open.
Wait. We might as well, we can just do a motion.
Okay, I make a motion that the select board meeting
will adjourn
at 10.
Can I have a second? Discussion? All in favor?
Elisa, aye.
Robin, aye.
Okay.